3 texts, and we're going to do that in a minute. So if you want to hold your finger there at Colossians chapter 3, we'll be looking at verses 1 through 15. But in order to understand that section well, we need to also understand what precedes it. And so I want to share with you, as we begin this morning, Colossians chapter 2, beginning at verse 16, and then I'll go into Colossians 3. This Colossians 3 passage, I'll be honest with you, I wanted to assign it as a memory text. And I'm going to do it, but I'm not going to do it now, because there's another passage that I want to use for you. You'll be getting it probably next week in preparation for our week of prayer. And I knew I couldn't lay on you two things at one time. But if you want to be looking ahead, I want you to be working towards meditating and thinking about what is Paul's remarks here, what are his remarks in Colossians 3, verses 1 through 15, and how that relates to our lives. I think it's very significant, and that's why I did commit it to memory, and I think it would be healthy for our church to do so as well. Paul, writing to the church at Colossae in chapter 2, beginning at verse 16, he says this: "Therefore, let no one act as your judge in regard to food or drink or in respect to a festival or a new moon or Sabbath day, things which are a mere shadow of what is to come, but the substance belongs to Christ. Let no one keep defrauding you of your prize by delighting in self-abasement and the worship of angels, taking his stand on visions he has seen, inflated without cause by his fleshly mind, and not holding fast to the head, from whom the entire body, being supplied and held together by the joints and ligaments, grows with a growth which is from God. If you have died with Christ to the elementary principles of the world, why, as if you were living in the world, do you submit yourself to decrees such as do not handle, do not taste, do not touch, which all refer to things destined to perish with the usings, in accordance with the commandments and the teachings of men? These are matters which have, to be sure, the appearance of wisdom in self-made religion and self-abasement and severe treatment of the body, but are of no value against fleshly indulgence." Okay, so here's what's happening here. There are a number of people that are in the church of Colossae that are beginning to teach as a matter of Christian conduct certain do's and don'ts that indicate spiritual maturity and vitality. Certain things you don't want to touch, certain things you do want to eat or don't eat, or certain regulations on days that you should observe or not observe. And that was becoming almost a law that was being introduced into the Colossian church. You know, a lot of this, too, you could put under the whole rubric of it's Jesus plus something. There's always something else that gets added into the gospel work that ends up some kind of a work that we do to earn God's favor. And what you've been taught from the very beginning is there is absolutely nothing that we can do to earn God's favor. We have God's favor simply out of his good love and his goodwill to us. And then when we are obedient to him, we don't do that as an act of trying to win his favor. It is an act or acts of trying to tell him that we love him. Jesus said, "If you love me, obey my commandments." That's what we do. Well, in this particular church, that's being diverted in some way, in which these teachings are coming in, that you need to add in these certain rules and regs, and that if you just simply do these things, that will give you a sense of well-being, a sense of your position in the kingdom is secure, and that you're right before God. Paul is writing against those things, and so that leads us to chapter 3. And it's with that backdrop that this is what he says. "If then you have been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things which are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things of the earth, for you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, is revealed, you also will be revealed with him in glory." What's the next one? Oh, dear. see. Great. When Christ, who is our life, is revealed, then you also will be revealed with him in glory. Therefore, consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. For on account of these things, the wrath of God will come. And in them you once walked when you were living in them. But now you also lay them all aside: anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abuse of speech from your mouth. And do not lie to one another, since you have laid aside the old self with its evil practices, and have put on the new self, who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. A renewal in which there is no distinction between Gentile and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave and free man, but Christ is all and in all. So, as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another, and forgiving each other, whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. Beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called into one body, and be thankful. That is the text. All right, let's take a look at this. I highlighted just the end of it last week, and I wanted to go over the rest of it with you today. Look at verses 1 and 2. If then you've been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things which are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Seeking things above means to strive after. That the task is not an easy one. There's something about it that involves a working, but it's not a working to earn God's favor. It's a working to be what he wants us to be. It'd be the same thing with regard to, for those of us that have had fathers that we wanted to emulate, that there was something about them that we wanted to please them, to let them know that they've had some effect on us. We do whatever it is that they do. Maybe they wanted us to clean up our rooms without having been told, or to do other chores around the house. We did them. And we got a smile as a result of that. There's a sense of that that's here. But there is a work to it, because there's part of our being that doesn't want to do that. So the remedy here of how to do this is the idea of that we're union. We have union with Christ, which is summarized on that banner. Our greatest benefit in life is union with Christ. What Paul was dealing with at the Colossian church were all of these different things that you had to do that somehow guaranteed an extra amount of being in his presence, somehow an extra standard of being connected to him. And Paul is saying, if you've died to these things, you've also already been raised up with him. You have something that is already in the palm of your hand. Don't let it descend into these various kinds of rules and regulations. There's something more that is here that you need to do. You know how hard it is in trying to get along with certain personalities in your life. Some people in your families, or some people that you work with, or some people that are a part of the church, you find a very difficult time in relating to, because you find that the personality that you're dealing with is just difficult to relate to. Having said that, I would suggest to you today that the issue here is you are the person. You've got to deal with yourself on these issues of dying to self. If then you've been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things which are above. Well, what's the biggest impediment to that? It's you. You are the difficult personality. You are the one with the fractured nature. And there is a work to that. That's why you must keep seeking, Paul is saying. Now, notes here that Jesus is seated at the right hand of God. There's no question here that this is contrary to those who would want to diminish Jesus as a mediator. And that was a problem, too, in the early church, trying to diminish his oneness with God, the fact that what he had done and his mediatorial work. Paul was making that clear. He is seated at the right hand of God. Other New Testament writers bring this out as well. The point of being seated means he's done. It's finished. There were no chairs inside the tabernacle or the temple for which a priest would be able to perform his duties and then sit down. The reason for that is duties were never done. There was never an end to the day. They were constantly at work. Jesus being seated at the right hand of God indicates not only favor and pleasure of the Father, it indicates it's a done work. It's finished. Set your mind on things above. This could also read, be intent on. J.B. Lightfoot, who was an English Bible scholar in the 1800s, put it this way. You must not only seek heaven, you must think heaven. That quote reminded me of a Puritan, and I don't remember who it was, but one of the Puritans was said that when he died, someone remarked at his grave that heaven was in him before he was in heaven. People like this walk out of step with the world. Their thinking is turning in a different direction. They find themselves more and more not in beat with everything else that's going on. Set your mind on things above. It's not the idea that you're so heavenly minded you're no earthly good, but it is an idea that the heavenlies are beginning to control how you live your life in this world. How you view your time, your talent, your treasure, as we prayed about in the morning prayer. Priorities of your life. Set your mind on things above. William Barclay said this, you no longer live in the world as if the world is all there is. And think about the people that you live and work with who are still in the unbelieving world. That's how they think. This is all there is. He who dies with the most toys wins. This is it. This is all there is. And at a pivotal time such as this, when this economy is turned upside down and there's so much upheaval that is there, the very foundations of some people's lives have been rocked. That is what I want to talk to you about next week. But that's the whole of their life. It's what they wear. It's what they, how they appear. It's what they have. You no longer live in the world as if the world is all there is. And then Paul makes this statement, for you have died and your life is hidden with Christ in God. This is an incredible statement. First of all, it's an aorist verb. You have died. It's totally past tense. It's done. That is, you are dead and buried. I think the way we ought to look at this is that all that is alien to Christ should be alien to us. A person who's dead doesn't care about what they wear. Right? They don't care what housing development they live in because they're dead. You have died and your life is hidden with Christ in God. There's another sense about this too, in that we came into the kingdom of God, we were saved, God brought us in, and because we have died and our life is hidden with Christ in God, the rest of this that we came from offers us nothing now. Now we all know that we still have a tendency to want to go back here and live this way, however that shapes up in your own life. There's that pull to want to go back. Paul is saying here, you can't go back. It would be like a 16-year-old who wants to continue to live like an 8-year-old. You can live that way, but you can't go back. You cannot go back to being 8 years old. So the word of the Lord here is, grow up. Grow up. What is it that is stopping you? What is it that causes you to stumble? Grow up and get on with it. You cannot go back. You can look like a 20-year-old that acts like a child, but you can never be a child again. You can't go back. Your life is hidden with Christ and God. The lie of the enemy is, oh, you can still live this way. This still has something for you. It has nothing for you. Nothing. You're different. You've moved on. Your life is dead. That old life is gone. And then he says, when Christ, who is our life, is revealed, you also will be revealed with him in glory. I mean, even that is an incredible statement. I mean, when he appears and there's the unveiling, you know, when every eye sees him and every eye beholds, in some way, shape, or form, we're going to be there. And we too are going to be revealed with him in glory. That's hard for me to wrap my head around that. Because all I can see with my naked eyes is still this sinfulness of the world I live in and the sin in me. But Paul is saying there's going to be a revealing and you're going to be there with him. Now, on the basis of that, he says, now, here's what I want you to do. Therefore, consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. Start living and desiring and acting the part now, is what he's saying. This is where you're going to be. Start living this way. Don't live the way this has always been in the past. Now, the word here, passion, is uncontrolled desire. And it's interesting to me, too, that on this list, greed makes the grade, too. Immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire. I mean, all of those tend to have, we might say, obviously, some of them are obviously sexually oriented. Evil desire maybe is a little broader than that. But greed makes the list. It reminds me of Paul's other list that we've already memorized from Ephesians chapter 5. We worked on this. Remember that? Therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children and walk in love just as Christ also loved you and gave himself up for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God as a fragrant aroma. Here it comes. But do not let immorality or any impurity or greed even be named among you as is proper among the saints. Ephesians 5, 1 and 2. Greed somehow makes these lists in Paul's mind. And I've been really struck by that in recent months as I, again, these are things when you start memorizing passages and you start hooking things up, sometimes things stick in your mind that you wouldn't have seen in other places. Greed. Maybe the connection has to do with the idea it's a desire or a passion that comes up out of the flesh. Maybe that's the connection it has with immorality. Sex is a desire of the flesh, and if it is not utilized within the confines that God has designed, it becomes an area of licentious sin. It's a desire. And the desire within us to have and to have more is very much a human bent in life. You find very few people that live very simple lives, and then if they get anything else, they just give it away. They could care less. They don't want it. Greed tends to make the list, and it's a word that is a good word for us to remember in the age that we live in, because there's a sense in which greed is held up as something that's good in the culture. My word, there are people telling you right now, one of the best things you need to do to help this country right now is spend. Spend, and if you have to use credit to do it, do it. In spite of the fact you know, it's like living on drugs. I mean, you got used to living on drugs, and then they're telling you, well, we got to get off the drugs, but yet you feel better when you're on the drugs, so we got to keep using the drugs. Greed. Greed makes the list. Watch out for it. Don't live this way. Therefore, consider the members of your earthly body as dead. Dead people don't move. Dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. Why? For on account of these things, the wrath of God will come. And in them you once walked when you were living in them. Okay, the word wrath here is the word horge. We'll talk about that again next week too. But let's just leave it at this, that this is a word that indicates the passionate fury of God. There is much that has to be said for the fact that God's wrath still exists upon the ungodly. And if there is ever a motivation to speak to people about the need for Christ in their life, it is the wrath of God. It's not the present pains of this life, the problems that they're in, trials with their families and structure with kids. And God is concerned about those things, but that is not their major problem. Their major problem is outside of Christ, they are one heartbeat away from meeting the worst possible nightmare that they could ever imagine. And even at that, it wouldn't do it. There are some that would suggest that in this life, you get hell now. The law of reaping and sowing. You sow badly, you reap badly. Well, there is some truth to that. I mean, Paul even talks about that in Galatians. But make no mistake about the evil that is in this world and sometimes the undoing that people go through on themselves, that somehow that could be equated to God's wrath in the afterlife. There is no way to even make a comparison on that. Remember, the authoritative person that spoke most about hell, damnation, and judgment was not the Apostle Paul. It was not Peter. It was Jesus. And Jesus said more about hell, damnation, and judgment than he did about love. It's true. And the pictures that he paints with respect to hell and damnation are too graphic to really imagine the magnitude of it. The place where the flames never go out, where the worm never stops eating, where there is gnashing and grinding of teeth. There are a lot of bad things that happen in this world, and sometimes they happen as a result of people's own actions. But that is not, as bad as it is, anywhere near what falling into the hands of an angry God is. Paul says, you were once over here. You once lived this way. Now, you're different. Don't go back. Don't live that way. It's past life. Then he says, but now you also put them all aside, anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive speech from your mouth. A slander here, at least in my version, in the NAS, that's blasphemia, which comes over directly into the English as blasphemy. Two Greek words here, blapto, which means to injure, and fame, which means speech. It's speech which injures. I mean, even in our families, when we are having dissent that's there, how easily some words fall off of our lips where we injure people. And even sometimes a look that which a word wasn't said, but the facial expression is enough to injure the person. Don't live this way, Paul is saying. Don't act this way. This is the former way. Do not lie to one another, since you have laid aside the old self with its evil practices and have put on the new self, who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. That is, Discard the worn-out garment of the way you dressed over here. Take it off, throw it off, and put on the new attire. There's a new wardrobe for you. There's a new way to act. There's a new way to live. It's a renewal in which there's no distinction between Gentile and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave and free man, but Christ is all and in all. A Scythian was a murderous, pillaging savage, and a barbarian was a non-Greek speaker, considered to be uneducated buffoons. Paul puts together connections here. Gentile and Jew, we all know about the differences that were there. He reinforces that. Circumcised and uncircumcised. Here he might even not just be talking about Jews and Gentiles, but also that push that happened in the early church that it's Jesus plus something and it's Jesus plus circumcision equals salvation. He might have that in his mind. He certainly had it in his mind in Galatia when he was writing that book to them. Barbarian, Scythian, slave and free man, but Christ is all and in all. God is no respecter of persons. There's people that are rich, people that are poor, people that have the right end of the town that they grew up in and supposedly on the wrong end of the town. It doesn't matter. And then he says this. So, as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Once again, here you have election. Here it is. So as those who have been chosen of God, could also be read as for those who have been elected of God. Now, you are to be different. You're different. You are to be different in the way you act because you're different because of God's working in your life. Why are these qualities necessary? Because I think they're like Christ. Jesus was this way. Compassionate, kind, humility, gentleness, patience. When you have these things growing in your life, you look like your dad. Someone walks by and he says, you know, she's got her father's eyes. That is what we should be striving for. I want to look like my dad. My dad is compassionate. My dad is kind. My dad exudes humility. Jesus, think of the humility of Christ. Even now we're celebrating Christmas, born the Lord of Lords, King of Kings, born in a stable of all places. And patient. How patient is God with us? I mean, think about your life. Why are they necessary? I think they're because they look like Christ. Of course, we talked about this last week, bearing with one another and forgiving one another. Whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. And beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. All right, here's the way I want to illustrate it this morning. You look carefully. Verse 9, verse 10, verse 12, verse 14. Verse 9 says, do not lie to one another since you have laid aside the old self with its evil practices. Verse 10, and you have put on the new self who is being renewed to a true knowledge. Verse 12, and beyond, as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion. And also verse 14, beyond all these things, put on love. Paul is working an illustration here of how to look at this. He says, you're dead. This is one way to look at it. You're dead to these former ways of life. Now live differently over here. Another way he's reinforcing this is, he's saying, take off these old things that used to adorn your life. Set them aside. Put on the new clothing. Lay aside. Take off. Put on. It's all over the place in this passage. It's hard to miss that, right? If we were diagramming this out. All right, here's the way I look at it. This happens to be one of the most favorite coats I've ever bought in my entire life. This coat has got to be at least 20 years old. I love this coat. I love this coat. There's just things I like about it. But it's falling apart. The lining in it is shot. If I'm wearing a ring, I have to twist the ring around when I put my ring into the sleeve so I don't snag out everything that's in there. I get it on and I say to Deidre, you know, it looks good. No one can tell, you know. And then she'll say, well, what about your sleeve? And what about this sleeve? And what about the band around the back? You're missing a part here and you're missing this. It's like, I don't see those things. I love this coat. Now, this is my new coat, which is no longer new. This is probably 10 years old. This coat was supposed to replace this, but I couldn't part with it, so I still have it. So I have this coat. And this we got probably, I'm guessing maybe 10 years ago. Get my wired up here. Hold on a second. Okay. I'll tell you what I hate about this coat. First thing is when I get this on, I have to do this. I got to snap these snaps. I hate this. I want to be able to just put the coat on. 10 years I've been putting up with this. But I wear this coat. Dieter says, you look nice in this coat. This is what we bought for you. This is what you should wear. Okay? Now, when I put these snaps on this coat, how long do you think that takes me? That takes me, I don't know, what, a couple seconds just to do that? Put that on like that? For me, that's bothersome to me. It's agitating. Okay? Now, this coat, to get this on, I got to be careful how I put my sleeves in it, my arms in it. Careful to make sure I don't snag anything else that gets on there. So you see right now, this is work. I got to get this around. Still not quite. There. No, still don't. There it goes. Then I got to do this. Then I got to flap this up because this collar is made that it has to go underneath there and then bring that around. I don't give it a thought. Now listen to me. When I say I love this coat, this is what I have to come to terms with when I eat this supper. Because there's parts of my old life I still love. And I tell myself lies that to live the life that Christ has outlined for me to live is harder. It's tougher than what I was doing in the past. But the truth of the matter is, to hold on to the things that are from the past are even more work. But the lie of the enemy is, they're not that much work. But they are. And Paul is saying here, you take this stuff off, it's the old life. It's the old way of doing things. You discard it and you live a new way. All right, now, listen to the text as we prepare to eat the Lord's table and think about God's word to you. And if you find yourself that when you are getting ready to eat this, that you think about the past, that you were living in that same way with that kind of clothing, that's what you want to go to the Lord with and ask Him for forgiveness of those things, whatever it might be. You know, maybe it was a coat of greed for you. Maybe it was a coat of pride. Maybe it was, who knows? They have all kinds of stuff attached to that thing. But Paul is saying we're different. This is a concluding statement. When he makes a therefore statement, he's saying, all right, now on the basis of what I've been teaching you, here's what I want you to do. Therefore, okay? And that's the way he begins this text. He says, therefore, in this text. I'm seeing too many of your faces this morning, and I'm thinking about things in my mind. that I've been dealing with you on. Okay. If then you have been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things which are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things of the earth, for you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, is revealed, you also will be revealed with him in glory. Therefore, consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. For on account of these things, the wrath of God will come, and in them you once walked when you were living in them. But now you also lay them all aside: anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive speech from your mouth. And do not lie to one another, since you have laid aside the old self with its evil practices, and have put on the new self, who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him, a renewal in which there is no distinction between Gentile and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave and free man, but Christ is all and in all. So as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another, and forgiving each other. Whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. Beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called into one body. And be thankful. That is God's word to us. And this is how we must act and abide. There is something special about when we come to the Lord for communion that somehow